baseball.
I see great things in baseball.
The Marlins Hot Stove with Kyle Seeloff is on 1230 The Zone and 940 Wins, Miami Sports.
Good to be back with you. Tuesday, December 19th. I'm Kyle Seeloff. Our producer is Ricardo Juanche, and this is the Marlins Hot Stove Show, brought to you as always by Geico. Saving you money on car insurance has been in Geico's wheelhouse for over 75 years. So after the game, get a quote at geico.com. Geico, so easy a caveman can do it. Back with you for another hour tonight, our last show until after the holiday season. So we will be off for a couple of weeks, but we've got a good show for you this evening. Marlins Vice President of Player Development and Scouting, Gary Denbo, joins us shortly. And Tim Healy of the Sun Sentinel will join us later with the latest on the situations surrounding Christian Yelich and JT Realmuto. I'm sure you've seen plenty of reports in recent days that they may be possible trade candidates now as well. So we'll get the latest on that front from Tim in a bit. Now, since we last joined you live from the winter meetings last Tuesday, Marcell Ozuna is now a St. Louis Cardinal. Late last week, the Marlins acquired outfielder Magnarice Sierra, right-handed pitcher Sandy Alcantara, and Zach Gallen, along with left-handed pitcher Daniel Castano from the St. Louis Cardinals in exchange for outfielder Marcell Ozuna. Ozuna made his debut for the Marlins back in 2013. He was a two-time All-Star, a Silver Slugger, and Gold Glove Award winner, and he's coming off a sensational 2017 season that saw him hit .312 with 37 home runs while driving in 124. So all the best to Marcell. He will surely become a fan favorite in St. Louis, and he was, I promise you, one of the best guys to work with in that clubhouse. Now, as for what's coming Miami's way, here was Marlins president of baseball operations, Michael Hill, on the haul. The Marlins got back in return for Ozuna.
And Sandy Alcantara, we're extremely excited about acquiring all four pieces in the deal. But in Alcantara, we feel like this is a frontline major league starter, a fastball in the mid to upper 90s, power slider. Change up in place, a talent that we're very excited to put into the organization. And Magnarius Sierra, we love the tool package that he brings, a speed element that we introduce into our lineup on both sides of the ball, offensively, defensively, an above average defensive player, above average arm. Above average speed tool, top of the lineup type of bat that we felt was nice to mix in when we think about, you know, spacious Marlins Park and his ability to cover ground and control the running game with his arm strength from center field. And Zach Gallen, we have upper level depth. Starting pitching projects as a mid-rotation starter for us. So excited to add that. And as we look to continue to build depth throughout the organization, you know, Daniel Castano represents a lower-level piece that we get to add as we, you know, continue to layer talent throughout the organization.
Well, I would say you could be sure the Marlins will continue to do just that this offseason. Hill was asked just how hard it was to part ways with longtime left fielder Marcell Ozuna.
Well, there's no question that Marcell Ozuna is a tremendous talent, and I think you look at the return that we were able to get for him. You see just how talented he was. But as we have said, you know, from the outset of this offseason, but as we started our off season, where the goal is a consistent one, that we need to improve our overall talent, improve our depth. When you think about Marcell, a 4+ major league service outfielder, 2 years away from free agency, we just felt like this was an opportunity for us to maximize our return as we look to build this organization and add tremendous talent in doing so.
Well, they did just that. Both Sierra and Alcantara have major league experience. So when may we expect to see some or all of the pieces the Marlins receive for Ozuna in the major leagues?
Well, Alcantara and Sierra have both already touched the major leagues, in the 2017 season. But you know, when you're talking about players and their timelines, we really leave that up to the player. And when they show us as an organization that they're ready to be consistent performers at the major league level, Zach Gallen has pitched up to AAA, albeit on a limited basis. So you would say that he is definitely close to the major leagues, and Daniel Castano's only pitched at A-ball. So, obviously probably further away. But when you're talking about pitching, you never know, when guys lock in and show that they're ready to move through the system.
Well, a lot of folks will have eyes on the Marlins farm system for the foreseeable future. You can certainly be sure of that. Now, speaking of the Marlins' efforts to reestablish their farm system, Hill had this to say when asked about the depth that's been created, in particular the amount of pitching the Marlins have received dating back to last summer through trades.
Well, as we talked about where we were as an organization and the organizational depth that we lack, as the overseer of our baseball operations and managing our roster, we try to seek as much value as we can in making our trades and going back to the July trades where the relievers were at their highest value. We felt like we took advantage of maximizing the value for David Phelps and for AJ Ramos and bringing quality pieces into the organization. And I think that will always be a theme when you think about how we manage our roster and try to make the most of our assets and give ourselves every opportunity to make a smart decision and smart trades. And, pitching will be a focus because it was obviously an area where we were a little short. But I always speak that you can never have enough depth across the board, and so we've tried to make the best trades that we can given our trade partners and maximizing the value that they have within their systems to make smart deals to allow us to continue to add depth. But to your point, Joe, since July, I think there's been 23 players added to our system and the frontliners for the majority of those deals have been starting pitchers.
Quick follow-up. A couple of guys you just got this week that are hitting triple digits in velocity, just having those type of power arms in your system and kind of getting to the position to be in your rotation?
Well, I think as we talked in our room in Orlando, we spoke of impact. We talked about championship caliber talent and making that a priority as we look to make all of our deals. As we go through this build, the goal is to add championship caliber talent to this organization that's going to put us in a position to win a championship. And you do that with elite talent, with upper echelon talent. The starters that we brought back, we feel as they continue to develop and they reach their potential, that these are pieces that can lead a rotation. And mid to upper 90 fastballs are just the start of it. When we look at the skill set of the pitchers, but everything came into evaluation as we look to add the most impactful pieces that we could in all of our trades.
Well, it has certainly been an eventful winter to date, and just to close out some of Michael's thoughts, he was asked if he anticipates any significant or major moves to transpire between now and the start of the 2018 spring training season.
The off-season, there's still off-season left, and we aren't finished at exploring ways to make this club better. As I said, we're going to always be in search of ways to improve our ball club, either through trade or through free agency or waiver claims or, you know, whatever the means that are available for us to make our club better. I just said it's December 14th, so we'll continue to talk to our peers and see if there's opportunities, you know, for us to get better. As I look at, you know, where we're at, we've added, you know, just in today alone, we added four players from St. Louis. We added, you know, two picks in the major league phase of the Rule 5 draft. We added four more pieces from the minor league phase of the Rule 5 draft. I think, you know, it will be an ongoing process as we continue to build this organization to try to add as much talent as we can and you know, give ourselves every opportunity to be successful in the long term.
Well, anything can happen, that we all know. We'll have to wait and see how things play out over the holidays in addition to the remainder of the offseason leading up to the start of spring training. Hey, time for a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by tonight by the Marlins' Vice President of Player Development and Scouting. That would be Gary Denbo, and he joins us in a couple of minutes on your home for Marlins baseball, 1230 WBZT The Zone and 940 Wins. Welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight, brought to you by Geico. Saving you money on car insurance has been in Geico's wheelhouse for over 75 years. So after the game, get a quote at geico.com. Geico, so easy a caveman can do it. Kyle Seeloff with you back in the 940 Wins Marlins Radio Network studios tonight. About a third of the way home in our third Hot Stove Show of the 2017-2018 season. Had a good couple of first weeks. We were live from the winter meetings in Orlando last week where we chatted with Michael Hill. And once we broke from the winter meetings, the news came down that the Marlins had traded Marcelo Ozuna for a plethora of prospects to the St. Louis Cardinals. So the moves keep on coming. The Marlins keep on making moves. And one of the men making the moves, that would be the Marlins' newest Vice President of Player Development and Scouting, Gary Denbo, who joined me over the phone this afternoon. Okay, joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight is the Marlins' Vice President of Player Development and Scouting, Gary Denbo, joining us this evening. Gary, first and foremost, welcome to the Marlins organization. It's been about 2 months for you. What's this transition period been like?
It's been very busy, Kyle. You know, we've had a lot going on, as all the fans know out there. But this first couple months for me has been basically about creating relationships here in the organizations and getting to know people's names and interviewing people to get to know them a little bit better. We've had some openings in the organization, so we've been busy trying to fill those player development staff and scouting openings. We've had some international showcases down in the Dominican Republic and down in South America. We've spent some time in the Dominican Instructional League and down in the Dominican scouting players for the international scouting department. We've attended the GM meetings and got some work done there, and then most recently at the winter meetings. So it's been a busy time. Basically, we're just trying to identify areas right now where we need to make adjustments in the organization and make this organization work a lot better.
I would imagine this is probably a loaded question for you, but why the Marlins? What was the appeal coming from an organization like the New York Yankees?
Well, first, the organization, you know, I've heard over time is filled with a lot of good people. And it's always an attraction for me to be a part of a good organization. I know recently we haven't won, but this organization has won in the past. It's to me, it's an opportunity to come in and build to help build an organization that you know, that consistently competes for championships over time. Whereas before, you know, it seems like they came few and far between. The championships were there, but we hope to build an organization here that is consistently in line to compete for championships year in and year out. That's our goal.
Gary, I do know that you have a longstanding relationship with Derek Jeter. How much of a factor did that play in your move to the Marlins organization?
Well, obviously, it was a big factor. Derek and I, you know, I had the opportunity to work with him over the years as he was a player and get to know him really well. I got a chance to coach him when he was a young player in the Yankee organization, and then later on when he was a major league player in the Yankee organization. So we developed a great relationship over time. I have a great deal of respect for Derek, the way he goes about his business. He's always had the mindset of a champion for me, and that meaning that he's never satisfied. He's always looking for ways to improve as a player himself, and now he's always looking for ways to improve the organization and make it better. Derek's all about integrity, doing the right thing at the right time, just because it's the right thing to do. He's about respect. He's always treated people the right way, and he's a high character guy, and you know those characteristics. To work with somebody with those characteristics, I think anybody would be interested in that opportunity. Way back when he was a player, probably 10, 12 years ago, we'd stand in the batting cage as we were doing our work, and he would spot things happening on the field and point out, if he ever had an opportunity to run an organization, what he might do differently. So Derek's had this in his mind for a long time, and he asked me to come and help him build a championship organization here, and it was a great opportunity, so I decided to come this way.
Well, I know Derek had 2 decades of longstanding success in the major leagues, but I think that's probably the first time we've heard that. Maybe it was something that he had floated around for a little while during his playing career, as Gary Dembo, the Marlins' vice president of player development and scouting, joins us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Gary, you have a long list of accomplishments yourself. What was it about this challenge of reassembling and retooling a minor league system in a major league organization that was so intriguing to you?
Well, I came from the Yankee organization. I was there for 23 years, the Yankee organization is now in a really good position, a position where they've got young players in the organization ready to compete for jobs at the major league level, and not just players, but impact type players. And everybody knows the Yankee organization is all about winning. But I spent the last 3 years as the vice president of player development there, but I saw an opportunity here, where I could either stay and maintain what was going on in the Yankee organization, or take the opportunity to, go help build a championship organization here in Miami. And the state of my career and my kids, where my kids are, and my wife. And, I just felt like this was an opportunity. It was just too good to pass up. We have intentions to win championships here. I used to play for a guy named Jay Ward. He was kind of my mentor back in my playing days. And Jay used to sit around after every game, and he'd always get to the point at the end of the night where he'd say, if we could just put the right group of people together, people that had good intentions and had the best interest of players in mind and had that championship attitude that we talked about earlier, then we would have a chance to dominate baseball and really run off a string of championships if you just got the right group of people together. And that's our intention here, is to bring the best people in the game all together here, good baseball men, put the best people in place here, and do our best to come together as a group and win championships.
From the folks that we hear from often, Gary, whether that's Derek Jeter or Michael Hill, they've been very transparent in regards to saying that there's a lot of work that has to be done before there is sustained winning. In your position, when you take on a task such as this one, where did you start when you took over day one and you got in your office and you looked at everything? Was it overwhelming at all to see how much work needs to be done?
There's a lot of work to be done. There's no doubt about it. But no, not overwhelming. As I said, there's some great people in this organization right now. Michael Hill has been a tremendous help to me as I've come into this organization to try to, first of all, to make me feel at home, to tell me about the organization and the people inside the organization, and to talk about some of the things that we needed to do better. So, but starting to build an organization, it starts with great people. So we're going to invest in people in this organization, try to bring the best people from outside the organization, of course keep the great people that we already have inside the organization. We've got to take a hard look at our scouting departments to make sure that we're getting the type of players that we need to build to sign and then or draft championship type players. So we've got to find the best scouts in baseball. If you've got great scouts, you tend to get great players. You put that together with great coaches, and that's the ingredients for a championship organization.
The Marlins Vice President of Player Development and Scouting, Gary Denbo, joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. As we get down to the nitty-gritty a little bit here, and Michael Hill alluded to this last week on a conference call, and we heard a little bit of it just a couple of minutes ago. The Marlins have acquired, Gary, about 23 players since I believe it was last June or July, knowing full well it's about the quality of the players in your system and not the quantity. But to have 23, you could say, fresh young players in your system, about half of those since you joined the staff, that seems to be a pretty good start if you were to ask me about what you guys are looking to do here.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, we've been able to add some very good looking young players into the system. You know, my philosophy here in building this organization, from a player development standpoint, from a scouting standpoint, is our number one goal is to acquire starting pitching for the organization. So our scouts are going to be out there looking for the best starting pitching candidates. We're going to ensure that the players with the best arms that are currently in our organization are going to get an opportunity to go out and start every 5 days and get the work in every 5 days of a starting pitcher, because starting pitching is so difficult to acquire through the free agent market or through trade. Nobody wants to give those guys up, so it's very important for us to be able to develop our own starting pitching, and it's one of the keys to building a sustainable championship caliber team. The other part of it is the guys that aren't pitchers that we've acquired, we're looking for great athletes, guys that play in the middle of the field, guys that, you know, over time in my coaching career, I learned very quickly that the better athlete you have, the better chance that player has to make adjustments on the field. Whatever he needs to adjust to, they tend to adjust faster. But, you know, this it's all about right now, identifying these players from our pro department, from our international scouting department, from our amateur scouting department, you know, to put together the right kind of information so that we can go out and get the best players, whether it be through deals or the draft or an international sign. So, you know, we're keenly focused on starting pitching, on getting athletes and finding the best players possible to add to this organization through our pro, amateur, and international departments.
When you build a minor league system, how important is it that every single player is getting the same instruction from whether it's the Dominican Summer League all the way up through the major league system, so when they do arrive that they are ready to rock and roll?
Yeah, that's extremely important. Continuity from top to bottom is important. I've already met with Don Mattingly and Tim Wallach and Juan Nieves and some of the major league coaches, Mike Pagliarillo and Frank Menachino, and so we've had meetings with those guys to talk about, you know, what it is they want to see when players walk in the door of a major league clubhouse, you know, what the look is, what they need to know to be able to go up there and have success at that level. We've been able to hire Dick Scott as our director of player development, and Dick Scott will be responsible for ensuring that we have continuity all the way from the Dominican Summer League team to the major league team and what we are teaching. It's important that we get great coaches. Over time, I've learned that, you know, you put really good coaches together with good players, and you've got a chance to develop some championship type players. And so it's important that we hire great coaches, all the way throughout the organization. So when these guys advance from level to level, then, they're working on the right things. Yeah, I would say that's one of the keys to building a great player and having a player that's not only able to make it to the major leagues, but go up and make an impact and be part of championship teams.
Gary Denbo joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show this evening. Gary, a couple more questions for you from a baseball operations standpoint, but I do want to talk to you a little bit about your career, so we will do so in just a minute. Maybe you alluded to it a little bit when you're talking about just pure athletes in a minor league system or a Major League Baseball organization, but when you take a look at guys, whether it's through acquiring guys in trades or drafting guys, are there maybe one or two or a few different must-haves for you in a player's makeup?
Well, yeah, I mean, Kyle, all players are different. But there are some ingredients that we like to look for, and that we, when our scouts identify, it's very attractive to us. You know, we want players, we want coaches, we want managers, we want everybody in the organization. But it's important to have, for a player to have a growth mindset, meaning, you know, he's willing to learn. He has actually a need to learn, a need to get better. That's something that Derek Jeter had every year when he was coming up through the organization and the Yankee organization. I mean, 2 weeks after the season, he would pick up the phone and call and say, hey, these are the things I need to work on this winter, and when are we going to get started? And that's the kind of makeup we're looking for. We want players that compete, players that love to compete. You've got to be mentally tough. It's a tough game, and it's not easy to get through the minor leagues and all to a major league level. You know, a guy that gets through the minor leagues to the major leagues is not just a good baseball player. He is one of the top baseball players in the entire world. So this is something that, you know, you've got to be mentally tough to get through it, because you're competing against the best of the best all the way through the minor leagues. So mental toughness is a big key. We want guys that have a great work ethic, you know, the guys that are out there working their tails off when nobody else is looking. You know, they're doing cage work, they're doing what needs to be done to prepare. So work ethic is incredibly important. You know, I mean, we're looking for players at a championship level. You know, not just, I mean, they're guys that can turn into championship players, but also the guys that that have that mentality on and off the field, guys that make good decisions off the field as well. So, yeah, those are a few things. Basically, we want players that understand that it's a privilege to be part of a major league organization. It's a distinct privilege to be part of the Miami Marlins, and that they understand how lucky they are to have the opportunity to compete at this level. And so, yeah, a player's makeup is very, very important.
Just a few more minutes with the Marlins' newest vice president of player development and scouting, Gary Dembo, here on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Gary, lastly, and it's one thing I've always been curious about in Major League Baseball, professional baseball, it's a business, and there's guys out there running around that make a lot of money. So my question for you, how hard can it be to get guys to buy into a particular process or a philosophy? And I ask that because many of these guys have done certain things a certain way for so long in their lives that ultimately got them to where they are today. So whether it's them being nervous about changing something in fear that they won't be as good as they were before, but how difficult can that be?
Yeah, it can be difficult at times. You're right. I mean, these players have got to where they are because they've been really, really good at playing a game or a particular part of the game. So when it becomes clear that adjustments need to be made, I think that's why it's important to have such good coaches. A good coach will tell you that if I can't give you a good reason for why I want you to make a change or make an adjustment, then you shouldn't even listen to me. So, you know, it's important to have good coaches that are knowledgeable in their area, and they have ways to present information that will let the player know that they have their best interest of the player in mind. And it's been my experience. You know, I didn't play in the big leagues, but I did get an opportunity to coach there. It's been my experience, if you show the player that you've got their best interest in mind and you have something to offer them and there is proof in their performance that it's going to make them better, then everybody wants to be the best they can be and everybody wants to win. So, you know, we find they listen a lot better when you show those that you genuinely care about the player.
Gary, you did mention you coached in the big leagues, but you did play professionally for 4 seasons. At what point did you realize player development and scouting and this particular expertise that you have developed is something that you wanted to do?
I guess probably back in the mid-'80s when I was a player in Double-A, and there was a pitcher, I can remember the date, Kyle, the day anyway, where there's a pitcher named Drew Hall that was pitching in the Cubs organization. He threw up in the upper 90s, and we were playing in Pittsfield in Massachusetts, and it was difficult to see the ball, and he threw me some fastballs that I really didn't even see before they hit the catcher's glove. So I think it gave me a little bit of a clue, you know, that you know, that was time for me to think about a coaching career. And luckily, I got the opportunity to begin coaching at an early age, so I gained some early experience.
Did you realize that you had a trained eye or a skill set to evaluate talent? Because it's certainly not for everybody, and it's not something, at least to me, that I would imagine a skill set that everybody possesses.
No. Listen, it's just as hard to find. It's incredibly hard to find great players in this organization or in this business. It's just as hard to find great scouts, guys that have that trained eye, guys that can – that can determine differences between players and line them up on their preferential list of who we should go after and who we shouldn't. I have great respect for scouts. It's guys that have been in the business for a long time, guys that have that trained eye. You know, I'm still working myself, to learn as much as I can. And I had to, benefit of being around a guy like Bill Livesey, who is a kind of a legend in the scouting business with the New York Yankees, and learned a lot from him. I learned a lot from Billy Epler, who's now the general manager of the Anaheim Angels. And I've been around some great scouts over time and got a chance to learn from them what to look for. And then I think the coaching experience helped as well. You know, being on the field and working with players, you kind of learn what can be fixed and what cannot be fixed and what are red flags to look for. But it's a very difficult thing. And like I said, for those scouts that do have that ability, that trained eye to evaluate talent, I have great respect for those guys.
Wrapping up just a few more minutes with the Marlins' Vice President of Player Development and Scouting, Gary Denbo. Gary, for folks and fans that follow baseball, I think the rational ones at least realize that every time you make a move, every time you make a trade, every time you draft somebody, not everybody pans out, right? The best kid in high school may never make it to the big leagues. I'll start by asking you this. Is there one pick or player acquisition you had the chance to make that you wish you had the chance and you didn't make it? Is there somebody out there over the years you say, boy, I had the chance to grab him?
Well, this particular guy, we didn't have the chance to get him, but we missed him by one. Back in 2009, I was involved with the Yankees amateur draft, and we missed getting to pick Mike Trout.
He's okay.
By one pick in the draft, and the whole draft room was kind of on the edge of their seat at that time. You know, we had a chance to get a great high school player from Texas that we ended up picking that year, but obviously the Trout pick would have probably worked out really well. That's a tough one. You know, but here's what people need to understand is the draft is a very, very difficult process. There are so many variables that enter into the decision-making process. You know, you can't go back and look at a draft and say, you know, you should have picked this guy, you should have picked that guy, because there's so many things that enter into that, the decision-making process, the money a player wants and what your scouts think of him, whether that player is even signable or not at that round. There's a lot of issues and a lot of variables that go into making the draft an incredibly difficult process. So those guys that are really good at it, I have great respect for those people that have learned to manage through that process and come out looking good more often than not, because you're going to make a lot of mistakes in the draft, and hopefully you just make less mistakes than everybody else, because it's really difficult.
I'm sure you hear about it. It's a hot topic that many like to discuss annually. How much do you rely on analytics, and how much do you still rely on what many would say in baseball that they've been around for a long time and it's purely the eye test to evaluate talent?
For those that say it's just purely the eye test, don't really know the role that analytics can play in the decision-making process and acquiring players or signing players or making trades. I'll tell you how much I believe in it. The first guy I hired his name is Dan Greenlee. He's our director of player personnel now for the Marlins. I was lucky enough to be able to work with him with the Yankees over the last several years. He is incredibly intelligent, has a great feel for how to use analytics to improve our scouting processes, to improve player development. And he has a great way of communicating those ideas and the numbers to our coaches to make them usable for our scouting people and our player development people. So, you know, I think analytics is incredibly important. I would never say that it would take the place of scouting. I know some organizations are leaning in that way. We will not. We will use analytics as kind of a checks and balance. We're going to ask ourselves, do the numbers back up what our scouts see? And we're going to ask ourselves, do the things that the numbers are saying back up what the scouts are talking about? So it's a checks and balance. It's very important that we use all the information available to make the best decisions possible, and we will certainly do that. But again, there is no substitute for good scouts out there on the road seeing players, and we are certainly going to use that information in the best way possible.
On the way out the door, I saved this one for last, Gary, but I ask you this because I know that it's something that you've seen develop. How rewarding is it, or can it be, to watch a plan come to fruition after years of hard work and building when it ultimately culminates in a world championship, what you and your staff now with the Miami Marlins organization will look to do over the course of the next couple of years?
Well, that's what we work for. We work to get that reward, to see our teams win championships. And it's all about winning at the major league level. I was lucky enough to be on some great teams as a player and as a coach, and picked up 5 World Series rings when I was with the New York Yankees. And it's an incredible privilege to be a part of a group like that. But I told our scouts and I told our player development people when I came in a few weeks back that, you know, I want everybody in this organization and I want every Marlins fan to feel the sense of pride that I felt this year, and, you know, the players from the New York Yankee organization that we had worked so hard to develop over time, guys like Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez and Luis Severino, those guys. You want everybody to feel the sense of pride you get when they go up there and you feel like you've had some small part in their development and they go up and have great success like they did last year. So that's what we're looking to build here. We want everybody to feel an incredible sense of pride of being part of this organization and then have that culminate in winning championships and then everybody celebrating. Because to win championships, it's entirely about a group effort from amateur scouting, international scouting, pro scouting, baseball operations, and player development. And all those groups have to come together to win a championship, and when that happens, it's a great thing.
Well, I have no doubt you guys are going to do it. Gary, it's been an absolute pleasure. Again, welcome to the Marlins organization. Thanks for the time tonight. Best of luck to you and your staff, and we'll chat with you soon. Thanks again.
My pleasure.
Well, that was the Marlins Vice President of Player Development and Scouting, Gary Dembo, and I know it's 25 minutes. I know that's a lot of stuff, folks, but all I would say is I would believe in this current regime and the folks that have taken over. They come from a place that knows what they're doing. Gary was instrumental in the mid-90s Yankees turnaround. He was very instrumental in some of those young Yankees you see now that will compete for a world championship next year. And you better believe they're going to do the same thing here in Miami in the years to come. Hey, before we go to break, the Marlins are unveiling a new online exclusive prizes every day through December 26th. It's the Marlins Holidays feature. You can win the opportunity to throw out the first pitch next season. You can head on a new vacation. You can host your group in a luxury suite for a game and much more. And for full details on that, you can go to marlins.com/holidays. That's HOLIYAYS. Also, back and better than ever this winter, heading into the 2018 season, it's the Marlins Ballpark Pass holiday offer. For $49.99 a month, you get access to every regular season home game in 2018 with no blackouts. Keep that in mind, no blackouts. Some terrific teams coming to Marlins Park. You'll receive a 10% discount in addition at the Marlins Park team store through December 31st. If you do, take advantage of the Ballpark Pass holiday offer. And to secure your ticket to the action, visit marlins.com/ballpark pass. Hey, we're headed to break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. We'll be chatting with the Marlins beat writer for the Sun Sentinel. That's Tim Healy. And that's coming up in a couple of minutes on your home for Marlins baseball, WBZT The Zone, and 940 Wins. Welcome back to the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. 940 Wins is always brought to you by Geico. Saving you money on car insurance has been in Geico's wheelhouse for over 75 years. So after the game, get a quote, geico.com. Geico, so easy a caveman can do it. Good to be back with you. I'm Kyle Seeloff. This is our final Hot Stove Show until after the holidays. We will not be back with you the next couple of Tuesdays. We will rejoin you after the new year, and we'll have to see how things play out until then. Thank you very much to the Marlins Vice President of Player Development and Scouting, Gary Dembo, for joining us. That was a terrific conversation. You can find it tomorrow morning on Marlins.com podcast. Right now, earlier this afternoon, I chatted with Marlins beat reporter for the Sun Sentinel, Tim Healy. Joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight, you know him, you see his work in the Sun Sentinel. He does a terrific job. Tim Healy joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show this evening. Tim, well, welcome. As always, it's been quite the offseason to date for the Marlins. You just wrapped up in Orlando last week at the winter meetings. I know this is probably a loaded question, but what do you make of the Marlins offseason thus far?
It's been honestly about in line with what I expected. I think, you know, as soon as the 2017 Marlins became a losing team, or it became clear that they were going to be a losing team, that this core was not going to be around for much longer, you know, particularly with Stanton and his backloaded contract, things like that. I think there was an expectation that he would be moved. So, you know, with Gordon moved, Stanton gone, Ozuna gone, I think that's in line with what I expected by, you know, August, September time.
What do you make of the moves? We will start with kind of in chronological order here, but the move that sent D. Gordon to Seattle and then the big blockbuster that fell Stanton to the Yankees.
I think with both of those, it was in Gordon's case, it was good that they could get rid of all of his money and pick up a decent pitching prospect and Nick Neidert from the Mariners. Much of the same with Stanton. They didn't get rid of all of his money, but when all of his money means $295 million and you can get rid of $265 million of those dollars, then that's a win, and that was always going to be the primary benefit to the Marlins with a Stanton trade. As far as the prospects they picked up from the Yankees, I'm really curious to see how Jorge Guzman develops. Michael Hill billed him as the hardest-throwing starting pitcher in baseball history, and what's crazy about that is that it's not even necessarily hyperbole. The guy sits 100 miles an hour with his fastball, touches 102, 103 with relative ease. And, you know, he's only pitched in short season ball so far in the New York Penn League, Staten Island this past season. But, you know, figure penciling for Greensboro in 2018, at least to start, I'm really looking forward to seeing him get some innings under his belt.
You follow the Marlins closely, obviously, and you kind of dive into the moves that are made and maybe what the Marlins got in return. Do you think those trades were fair coming back for the Marlins in terms of, obviously, Stanton? That was not an easy contract to move with $295 million remaining over the course of the next 10 years. As for D. Gordon, he had money attached to him as well. Do you think what the Marlins got in return was fair? I know that's been talked about a lot.
Yeah, I thought the D. Gordon return was fair, especially when you factor in the money. With the Stanton trade, I know it's weird on its face to think, wow, here's the NL MVP, and all the Marlins got were two low-level prospects, low-level in terms of where they are in the minors, not necessarily in terms of ceiling. But you have to consider the situation. You know, the money obviously was a huge deal, and Stan's no trade clause was a even bigger deal, arguably, especially when it boils. You consider the fact that Stanton turned down the Giants and the Cardinals. It didn't leave the Marlins with a lot of leverage. So on its face, yeah, sure, you can say the Marlins should have done better when trading their franchise player. But the reality is that may not have been possible given the circumstances.
I like the move for Marcell Ozuna. What do you think?
Yeah, I do too. I thought they would try to wrangle two of those Cardinals high-end pitching prospects in this deal, but instead they end up with one in Sandy Alcantara and then an outfielder who's already reached the major leagues in Magnarius Sierra. So instead of two pitchers, it's a pitcher and an outfielder. I guess you take that. I'm really looking forward to seeing both of those guys in spring training. Alcantara, also a hard thrower, not quite as hard as Guzman, but very young, upper 90s fastball. You know, the Marlins sell him, too, as a front-line starting pitcher at some point. So, you just kind of throw him into the pile of these prospects they're accumulating and will probably continue to accumulate and, you know, see what happens to him. In terms of Sierra, you know, in terms of pure, I haven't seen Sierra play. Actually, that's a lie.
We saw him in spring training.
Yeah, we saw him in spring training, and I think he played a couple games at Marlins Park, too. So I guess I did see him, even though I didn't note much of him at the time. But he kind of feels like a little bit like Denard Span, maybe with a better defense, but fast, not a lot of power, but does a decent job, you know, obviously with that speed of beating out balls, decent average, things along those lines. So a couple of decent pieces in that trade. And, you know, as you would expect, given the quality of player Ozuna is.
I understand full well that not all of these guys will pan out, but we have talked a lot about roughly 23 guys, I believe it is, that have come to the Marlins organization, are new to this organization since the Marlins started swinging deals, and it started with Adani Echevarria last year. Tim, I don't think that's something that should be undersold. And again, I know full well that, you know, maybe two or three or four of those guys pan out, but this process is not new. The getting rid of some of the bigger name guys on the team is not new. This is a process that started last summer.
It is a process that started last summer, and you're right in that the approximately two dozen names they've brought into the organization ever since, I think starting with the Adani Echevarria trade and bringing Braxton Lee into the organization. He's another guy you'll probably hear a lot about during spring training. He had a great AFL season. He'll be in the outfield mix. But you're right, in terms of the 23, 24, however many names it is, and when it comes to projecting prospects out, That's insanely hard. One, on an individual level, to make it to the majors is wildly difficult. And for us on the outside to try to project which guys are going to be, which guys are going to make it to the majors, which guys are going to be impact long-term major leaguers, that's incredibly difficult. And the bust rate for prospects is very high. That said, if you take those X number of prospects and three, four, five of them turn into legitimate major leaguers, that's a huge win for the Marlins. Even that, you know, looks like a low percentage, but that's just the reality of the game, reality of the industry.
Tim Healy, the Sun Sentinel, joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. This could get dicey. What's the latest with Christian Yelich and JT Realmuto? What are you hearing? There's a lot of reports out there, Tim.
There are a lot of reports, and what I'm hearing is about what you would expect, given that their best friends and teammates have been traded away, that they're not particularly happy with what's going on. But I think maybe in the last couple of days there's been a growing expectation from fans that maybe they're on their way out too, but I don't think that's a certainty. Christian Yelich and the Marlins are supposed to talk sometime this week about essentially what the Marlins' plans are. And I think there's an opportunity there for Michael Hill or whoever it is from the Marlins who talks to Christian Yelich to essentially sell him on the idea of this is what we're doing. This is why we want you to be a part of it. Maybe we plan to be legitimately competitive by year X, whatever that is in their plan, you know, sketch out some future lineups they're trying to project out, and essentially sell Christian Yelich on the idea of why he should want to be a Marlin and why he should want to be at the forefront of this rebuild. With Realmuto, I know that there were reports that he, quote-unquote, requested a trade, and I think that's a bit dramatic.
I agree.
A little bit of a dramatic way to put it. What I'm told by someone, you know, who's familiar with Realmuto's thinking is that it wasn't so much requesting a trade as it was saying, hey, Marlins, I'd rather not be the only guy left. And really what he was trying to do there is avoid the scenario, the possible scenario that, or the realistic scenario that he's the only guy left that they move Yelich to, and then it's JT Realmuto and a bunch of dudes nobody's, you know, really ever heard of on the Marlins. And that for him as an individual, that's a fair thing to want to avoid, I think. So from the Marlins' perspective, it's their job to try to sell both of those players on it. And really the Marlins are in a good spot. Either they keep these guys and they have two pretty solid building blocks going forward, or they can move them. There would be a huge market for either of those players. And I think if they move either of them, it would bring up back a bigger haul than any of the other players traded this offseason would or have. So it's kind of a win-win for the Marlins if you look at it that way.
Do you think they're going to trade them? Yes or no?
It can go either way right now. I think right now it's leaning toward a trade of Yelich. But, you know, again, it's up to that. It's up to the Marlins.
Yeah, but with the reports out there, Tim, I don't know if they can sell Realmuto on it then.
Well, you mean if they trade Yelich?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's true and what's not true, but if they trade Yelich and, you know, if JT is unhappy, let me just say this. I know that my opinion on this really doesn't matter, but I'm going to give it to you anyway because I like having this discussion, Tim. You know, the one person I continue to think about in another organization that might be in a similar circumstance was Jose Altuve all those years ago, you know? Yeah, they were able to sell this guy, trust us, trust this plan. because this is going to culminate in a world championship, and you guys are going to be the face of a franchise, and decades later that's going to say they went through so much together. They were sunk in the bottom of the ocean, and they came back up. I can totally see Christian Yelich and JT Realmuto being those two guys that kind of prevail in this. But
Absolutely.
I don't know.
Absolutely. I think the Marlins can definitely point to Altuve, and in the Cubs instance, maybe an Anthony Rizzo, who was one of the first players acquired by their regime. But the difference that needs to be noted with Altuve is that when the Astros started their rebuild and really bottomed out, he was a pre-arb player. He was not a top 100 prospect. He obviously became a very good major leaguer very quickly once he got there. But he was not a Yelich or Realmuto in that he was established, burgeoning potential all-star type player when the Astros were in their similar situation. So it's a lot easier to sell that pre-arbitration player on that sort of plan than it is to, guys at the stage of their major league careers, right. Especially a guy like Yelich who signed his long-term team-friendly deal and was signing up for something, and this is not what that something was.
Tim Healy, the Sun Sentinel, joining us on the Marlins Hot Stove Show tonight. Okay, so I guess that kind of takes care of moves that have been made, moves that could be made. But one thing we haven't really talked about, you did a little bit, Tim, but where do the Marlins go the rest of the way this offseason? What needs are they going to have in terms of, maybe picking up some wily veterans out there to kind of plug some holes if that is a need? What do they need to do?
I spent probably more time thinking about this than I should the last couple of days, but it's crossed my mind that the Marlins, it's possible that the Marlins go through the whole offseason without signing a major league free agent.
And just use what they have in the minor league system right now?
Yes, I could see that playing out that way. That said, it's normal for rebuilding teams such as the Marlins to sign perhaps bounce back candidate veterans on short-term, relatively low money deals, perhaps incentive laden deals, in the hopes that they have good first halves and then they can flip them for prospects come June, July time. I think that would be a wise investment. That's, again, a standard thing for rebuilding teams to do.
You think they would ever trade Justin Bour and pick up Adrian Gonzalez?
I can't see that, just because, I don't know, what is Adrian Gonzalez bring to a team right now? I don't really know.
Well, I don't know. I guess just in terms of if there is, if they do feel the need, if they do think that Justin Bour could get back a decent haul and Adrian Gonzalez is being paid by the Dodgers and he'd be making $600,000 or whatever it is. That's an interesting name out there. Maybe even a guy like Matt Kemp, I saw that there's no guarantee that he's even going to be in a Dodgers uniform come spring training. Just, I guess it's going to be guys like that, though, to your point, right?
It would be. And Adrian Gonzalez in particular is an interesting name as a former Marlin, of course, and as an established name and maybe a little bit of star power still, and somebody who they wouldn't have to pay very much money. I could see that potentially being attractive, but I don't think they'll trade Justin Bour when it comes down to it, at least not this winter.
Boy, it's going to be an interesting offseason. Tim, you always do a wonderful job. Thanks so much for the time tonight. We'll chat with you soon, buddy. Thanks again.
Anytime. Thank you, Kyle.
Boy, heck of a show tonight. Thank you to Gary Denbo. Thank you to Tim Healy. A lot to take in. It's been a crazy month for the Marlins. We're off the next 2 weeks. We will join you after the holidays. Happy holidays, everybody, for Ricardo Juanche. I'm Kyle Seeloff saying so long. We will rejoin you from the 940 Winds Marlins Radio Network studios after the holidays. Be safe, folks. We'll chat with you soon. Thanks for the time tonight.